How We Met Your Mother is the How I Met Your Mother rewatch podcast with me, Josh Radner, and series co-creator Craig Thomas. Follow How We Met Your Mother wherever you get your podcasts.
So, question you asked in your show sheet, are you rooting against the LIV guys?
Hey, U.S. Open going on right now.
I put $3 down on John Rahm to shoot over 72 and a half today.
It's like the don't pass line in craps. You're just going against it. Let's go. Don't like Rahm.
You know what's funny is I've never done, like, whenever I've bet golf, okay, it's always been.
Right, you're always thinking.
Who am I rooting for? Who do I want to do well? Who do I think? Mostly it's who do I think it's going to do well, and why do I think they're going to do well?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's usually,
I've never done the somebody to blow up. But the conditions and the rough and all that, I figure there's not going to be a lot of scoring today.
No.
And
I think it's a solid call by you.
So I was like, which LIV guy do I think is going to have the worst day? And some of them had higher numbers than 72 and a half, but I went Rahm. I went over 72 and a half on Rahm.
I like the call. When does he tee off?
It's not till this afternoon. Yep.
I like it.
Do you?
Yeah. I think it's kind of fun that you're doing that. It's weird because like, I think my sense when I bet, I only bet typically on football games.
By the way, let me just step back and say one thing. I apologize because I just can't stand LIV. I'm being very fanboy here. I hate what they've done to the PGA Tour. These guys have made deals that have taken care of their generational wealth and taken care of their family, blah, blah, blah. I think they've made golf worse. And so I'm just fanboying out. But I apologize for interrupting.
No, that's fine.
Sorry, I just want to make that point.
So I typically only bet on football. And it's just it's a mindset, right? Like when you look at games and you see, let's say, for instance, hey, Lions are favored by 4.5 over the Bears. And I'm like, okay, I like that. I rarely look at I'm always looking at the favorite and saying, do I like that or not? And if I don't like it, I move on. As opposed to thinking, you know, the thought process should be, well, if you don't think that's good, then why don't you go the other way?
Right, right.
Take the 4.5 and the Bears if that's what you think. You know, I rarely look at the other side of it. I mean, I do sometimes, but it's just like, that's not the way my thought process goes. I have to really be in a different mode to do that. So it's interesting with, like, these over-under totals and will this person make the cut or will he shoot better than this? It makes all the sense in the world. That's an interesting way to look at it. I kind of want to look at who's teeing off this afternoon and maybe try to do something similar.
Scoring's not going to be great today, right?
No, it shouldn't.
First of all,
it was delayed by 2 hours because of, you know, meat in the air or whatever it was.
Meat?
I don't know.
Yes, fog. There was meat in the air.
And fog.
Yeah.
You know?
Nobody wants to play in those conditions when there's meat in the air.
There was meat in the air. It was terrible. It's a morning mutt like this.
The other thing is, did you see they're changing the format of the Home Run Derby?
No.
Okay.
Again?
Yeah.
What do we got now?
Well, first of all, do you care about the Home Run Derby?
Every year I say I don't, and yet I watch it every year.
Okay.
So I like to see how far they hit it.
So they've had a clock on the Home Run Derby for the last few years. They are now going back to just you get 20 swings in the first round.
Make them count.
Yep. So
the most home runs you can hit is 20.
Well, no, because when you're down to your last swing, if you hit a home run, you get another swing.
Okay.
So your last swing, you swing until you're out, basically. So if you hit a bomb.
Okay. Then yep. Only on the last swing, though.
Yep.
Gotcha.
That's in the first round. In the second and third round, you get 15 hacks.
Okay. So similar thing on the last home run.
Yep. You can,
okay,
last home run, you can keep going.
All right.
And that's the new format.
Because
you know what's funny? I mentioned this. I don't expect to get a lot of calls, but I think there's a possibility that people complain about the format that while it's going on.
I think everybody, of course, and I think everybody would have an opinion on this if you watch the Home Run Derby. I just want a way to make it move quicker.
I don't think that's what they're trying to accomplish.
Just be better. Well, but if you're saying you get 20 swings, before you had like it was like 10 outs or something.
Yeah,
you know, 10 swings and not home run, and so this seems to be better. Like it should be more streamlined. But as it gets more competitive, guys are going to be more selective of what they decide to swing at. Mm-hmm. which is maybe at some point they're going to figure it out. They're going to do that combined with a time limit. You know, maybe that just should be how it is anyway. You get 2 minutes. How many home runs can you hit in 2 minutes? Which they've done that in the past. So I'm not sure why they keep changing a format. I don't know if they're ever going to find the one that works.
They've had a clock since 2015, but I think they've changed the format within the clock rules. The other thing is you put something in your show sheet today that made me say, why did he do that? You wrote Trey Young is declining his option to become a free agent, which I saw that too. Uh-huh. But then afterwards you put, why'd you do that? Why'd you do that?
What? I was going to try to troll you. And then you find out, of course, his plan all along was he was going to decline the options so they could work out a long-term deal with Washington. But if they didn't, if he actually hits free agency to go to the rest of the league, if he was truly available, the Pistons would have to have taken a look at him.
No, they don't. They wouldn't have to do anything, Scott.
What do the Pistons need? A ball handler?
There's plenty of other ball handlers.
Do they need a guy who can score and be a ball handler?
Plenty of other options.
Need a guy who can.
If you're going to spend that kind of money, not Trey Young. Not Trey Young.
Okay. If he had truly become a free agent, if he was truly on the market, would you want the Pistons to go after him?
Probably not, but not because I dislike him like Doug does. I just think that stylistically it wouldn't match up with what the Pistons need. He
and
is
there's
a ball
that
handler.
Too, stylistically. Yeah, stylistically.
He's a ball handler, but he's ball dominant. I think you want Cade to be still the ball dominant alpha type male on the team. So
maybe he's a different player if he's playing with Cade.
But I do think Trey Young can do positive things for an organization and franchise, unlike Doug. Doug
just not
hates
this
him.
One. Not this organization.
No, you don't
franchise.
Even think he's good at all, I don't think.
He's really not. Let's face it, he's not a good basketball player. He's a good foul baiter, and he shoots free throws. But other than that, I'm not even sure he belongs in the NBA.
Why are you trying to get all riled up, Gator?
Let me just be clear.
Because it's fun?
All it was let's get a reaction out of Doug. You're not building a case.
It's moot because he's gonna sign an extension with, or he's going to sign a new contract with Washington anyway. But when I wrote, I will say this, when I wrote that this morning, I didn't know that was the case.
What if there was accessibility to SGA? Would you be able to do that?
Yes. Why would I
not
say,
Doug?
I mean, you don't want the MVP?
I don't. I don't want that MVP. And I think, let me ask you this. Do you think in the next few years, we're going to see a change in the way the game's officiated and that SGA's foul baiting will take away from his productivity at this level? That he won't be as effective? Because I would bet, I would not invest in SGA right now.
No?
Nope. Or any foul baiters. I think the league has had enough.
If the league has had enough and he has to stop doing that, you know what he ends up being? A great player. Well, he's still going to score.
Maybe just maybe.
It's just he's not going to be foul baiting anymore. He's going to have to earn it a little bit differently, and he'll figure out a way because he's that damn talented.
I got to tell you, with SGA, I'm not sure he knows how to play the game without foul baiting. I think he's done it for so long, and he's so committed to it. I'm not sure that he'll be able to adjust to, hey, I'm just taking a shot. I don't need to fall down.
Every time.
Yep.
I mean, sure, yeah, it's instinct now, and he's part of his game, but he could adjust. He's that damn good. I mean, just the perfect example is Jalen Brunson. Like, I could not stand how Jalen Brunson played in the playoffs last year and a lot of times this year, but when push came to shove and they started letting them play more physical, they weren't calling all the fouls, Jalen Brunson, guess what? He was still damn good because he's that good without all the theatrics and the embellishments. And he willed his team, basically, to a championship, which is unreal. Jalen Brunson's a stud, and guess what? He can play basketball without doing all that stuff. So I think SGA could do it too, Doug. It's just right now, that stuff really gets under your skin, and I totally understand it, man. It's, you know, we heard it all playoff long, right, Doug? From fans, when we're talking Pistons, no one likes it. As from a fan point of view,
to the point where I'm willing to punish my own team and not go after Trey Young or SGA if they were available.
It's hard to score when you're horizontal to the court, and yet somehow they find a way to do that.
All right, Gator, voice from the meta world, rip some of his contemporaries.
The meta world?
Metal.
Oh, metal.
Like, yeah.
Like heavy metal.
Yeah,
music?
One of your guys.
Oh.
We'll get to that today at 1:16. Then some Tiger Talk at 1:20 on Carson Anderson on 97.1. All right, Gator. How's your relationship with Iron Maiden?
I love Iron Maiden.
Yeah. Sometimes it feels like the news is full of things that have never happened before. And that is not exactly true. In fact, it may have happened this very week, hundreds or thousands of years ago. I'm Sally Helm, host of the podcast History This Week from the History Channel. Trade embargoes? Thomas Jefferson tried them. Rent too high? We've been arguing about that for a while. Each episode is proof. The past isn't that far away. Listen to History This Week, available now on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Bruce Dickinson. They have three guitar players.
Iron Maiden's Bruce Dickinson blasts singers who keep performing when their voices are shot.
Yeah, I imagine that's a direct hit on David Lee Roth and Vince Neil. David Lee Roth, formerly of Van Halen, now tours by himself with a band that sounds great, but he can't sing anymore, and Vince Neil with Motley Crue cannot sing.
Look, there are loads of singers whose voices are shot, and everybody knows it. Yeah, they're legends. They're not blanking legends. They're people who can't sing anymore. When they were singing, they were legends. When they can't sing anymore, they're not legends anymore. That's the end of that. Brutal truth. I couldn't go on stage if I didn't think I couldn't do it. I don't know how people get on stage when they can't do it anymore. Obviously, it's their life, but it's not my way.
So Bruce Dickinson is one of the truly great voices in rock music, not just heavy metal, but just hard rock music. He has a great voice, and he's been doing it for 50 years. I think he's in his 70s now. He still sounds great. Mm-hmm. Is it as great as it was 25 years ago? No, but it's still really, really good. David Lee Roth, literally, I saw Van Halen play the last show at Pine Knob, I don't know, was it 7 years ago or so. And then, unfortunately, Eddie Van Halen died less than a year after that. David Lee Roth, for the first two songs, sounded great. And then he lost his voice and he was done. And he couldn't sing the rest of the show. And he's basically just talking it, prancing around, dancing and smiling and stuff. And it was fine because he's a showman and he could still get away with it. But everybody's there to see Eddie Van Halen anyway. If you have your algorithm and you start watching videos online, like my algorithm goes to hard rock music, and I see these videos come up all the time of David Lee Roth currently, who's out on tour, and he literally can't sing. You can't even understand what he's saying, and he ends up either holding the microphone out for the crowd to sing his songs, or when he does, he just talks it. And again, he's just smiling and he's prancing around, and like you've got no business doing it anymore.
Are the people eating it up? Do you think they're entertained?
I know how I would feel. I'd feel like I was cheated on this. Like, I don't need to see that again. Fortunately, when I saw it, it was Van Halen's group, so I got to see Van Halen. That to me was awesome. But David Lee Roth, it was unfortunate he was done. Now, one of my favorite bands is Dokken, and Don Dokken, the singer of Dokken, his voice is shot now too. I won't see Dokken perform again. I don't need to see that. It's just sad. To see guys like that go there. My favorite band is Queensryche. They parted ways with their lead singer years ago, Jeff Tate. He tours around now. And his voice has changed dramatically from where it was. It's not shot, but it's different. And because he's not with Queensryche anymore, I don't want to see that. Like, I just wanted the memories of the band that I fell in love with and the band that I saw live a half dozen times. I'll leave that there. When the voice goes, I don't need to see it. And fortunately for Bruce Dickinson and Iron Maiden, his voice is still golden.
I was going to ask do you ever see somebody after their voice was shot, they couldn't perform anymore, and what the experience was like? And you had one instance. Is there any others, or just the one with David Lee Roth?
I mean, I saw The Who perform with Roger Daltrey. They did Quadrophenia in its entirety. That was maybe 15 years ago. Mm-hmm. And his voice was pretty well shot, but it was The Who, and I wanted to see it. It was a grand spectacle they had. They had special guests come out there, and it was worth it for a concert. But, you know, he did it as best he could, and he knew that there are parts that he just can't do anymore, so he sings them differently, and I can respect that, but it was different. It truly was.
Yeah. 248-539-9797. Now, part of this is Bruce Dickinson offering up the opinion in the first place. He didn't have to say anything about anybody else.
Well, I'm sure he's asked. That's the thing. Somebody's going to ask him, and he's not afraid to speak his mind. He never has been.
Yeah.
And it rubs people the wrong way sometimes, but you know, so be it. I remember I saw Iron Maiden at the Palace years ago. They had just released a new album like 3 weeks earlier. And they played the entire new album and then only played like four of their classic songs. And the crowds were pissed. And halfway through the show, he said, look, we're playing the whole new album because it's new music for us and we're trying to get out to you people. If you don't like it, we're sorry. You know, and then they end up playing their encore songs. Everybody loves the encore songs, but you know, they've got like 15 songs that people really want to hear. They didn't want to hear this whole album. I had just bought that album and I loved it. I'm like, I'm fine with it. But that's how people get pissed sometimes because they don't want to hear the new stuff. They want to hear the stuff they grew up on. And you see people just turn on bands all the time.
Why do you think they do this? Just because it's strictly money? Like, why are you, you know, is it like fighters? You know,
like
how they
David
don't
Lee
stop?
Roth, why does he do it?
Just in general, like bands that just, they don't have it anymore. That it's the lead singer can't sing, you know?
I think for some it's money. It's a money issue for sure. And I think for others, it's like, that's what they do. You know, that's their career.
Like they can't get away from love the stage and all that stuff. That, you know, it's like competition for fighters and things and athletes. But,
you know, and these are bands that are, guys are in their late 60s or into their 70s. David Coverdale from Whitesnake, he retired from performing live because he knew his voice was going, but he just didn't want to do it anymore. Paul Rogers, one of my favorite voices of all time, was with Bad Company and Free back in the classic rock era. But he hasn't performed lately because he's got health issues. When you know, you know. But
it's even
hard,
when you don't
it's hard
know.
For these, yeah, it's you, hard you, for you, these guys to walk away from it because it's the adoration you get from performing live in front of 20,000 people or in front of 50,000 people, whatever the crowd is. They love that. It's a rush.
So this is a different, complete type of music. But did you see Frankie Valli? Is that how you say Valli?
Frankie Valli, yeah.
You know he was on tour, right? Do you know how old he is?
He's got to be in his 80s.
Higher.
Is he in the 90s?
92 years old.
Oh, my God.
And he's touring?
No, he just stopped. He abruptly canceled it because there was a video of him out there, guys, where I don't know how else to put it. It was like a mannequin almost standing there holding a microphone. It was sad. It was unbelievably sad. And so now they've canceled the tour because it was a farewell tour to focus on his health, which because someone taped this with their phone or whatever, recorded it, right? And said, look at this. What are we doing here? Does he need money that bad? Or like,
I don't know why. I mean, some people, like I said, they just can't stop performing. They think that highly of themselves.
He wasn't even performing.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? He was just there. They're just playing the music over the speakers and then backing.
A couple years ago when I saw the Eagles play at LCA, Steve Miller opened up. Steve Miller Band opened up for what was just Steve Miller.
Saw them years ago.
He was 80 when he was performing, and he did great.
Dude,
I was like, I don't like Steve Miller, but I'll give it up to you. You sound great.
Well, Rick Springfield, there was something going viral the other day of him performing and looking in his 40s. He's 76.
Yeah, he's had some work done.
Let's go to Robert. You're on 97.1. Hello, Robert.
Love the show, guys. Love the topic. Two worst. I have two really good ones and two really bad ones. Bob Dylan, a decade plus ago, was awful. Just dreadful. And you wanted to walk out after two songs because he just couldn't hit any notes.
I feel like he's always been an acquired taste anyway because his vocals are terrible, but I mean it's really the words and what they mean as opposed to how he sings them. But yep.
And then I would totally back you on the Who. That was excruciating. The only thing that made it worthwhile was Pete Townsend's genius, but Robert Daltrey couldn't. That was terrible. But the two recent ones that I had that were awesome, I saw Maiden last year. And Bruce, like you said, he could still bring it. Is he as good as he was 20 years ago? No, but he's still
great.
8.5 out of 10. And then two nights ago, I saw Black Crowes.
Oh, Chris Robinson?
And Chris Robinson, he's almost 70, I think, or almost 60. He still brings this energy. Like he's like a Southern rock Mick Jagger with the way he, you know, runs around and with his hands and with his arms, and he still is given 110%, and he still sounds fantastic.
He's been re-energized. Like I think there was a period there where I don't know if he was touring anymore, and then he was convinced to come back out there. And stuff I've seen of them live, they sound great. Black Crowes sound great. The two brothers are doing great.
Jim is next on 97.1. Hello, Jim.
Hey, how you guys doing?
Excellent.
Hey, I want to let you know that I just saw David Lee Roth this Saturday at Firekeepers Casino in Battle Creek.
Yeah.
And I had a sixth row, and I was right on the aisle, basically right side of the guitar, guitar player side. And I tell you, you know, my first concert was 1980 Van Halen, and I've been a huge David fan ever since. He couldn't sing back then either. You know, he was always an off-key singer. You know, what you do in the studios is one thing. What he does on stage is another. But that guy can control a crowd better than any entertainer in his time and his prime. And if you're still a fan or whatever, you still appreciate what he's doing because he doesn't change.
Yeah, he's a great frontman. There's no question about that. I just don't know if I want somebody talking the songs to me.
Let's go to Michael next on 97.1. Hello, Michael.
Hey, hi, this is Mike Wondowski from Sterling Heights.
Okay.
And I know Scott's a big fan of Aerosmith, and I'm a huge fan of Aerosmith, seen about 50 shows. And I still think Steven Tyler and Joe Perry are dead on. I mean, for being in their 70s, I think they're really, really good.
Yeah,
they still sound good.
I saw them, whatever it was, 10 years ago at Pine Knob, or 9 years ago, whatever it was, and they sounded great. Steven Tyler was great. He's had some health issues since then. I don't know if he's ready to tour again or not, or if they're going to. I mean, the rumor was they were done touring, but we'll see.
Yeah, I think the worst time of their career was obviously like when they were on drugs and they were sloppy and just didn't care. Once they cleaned up, they were way better than they were before. And I saw Joe Perry at a club not too long ago, and it was like the best show I've ever seen. And if Steven can get his vocals back, I still think he's good for 75 years old or whatever he is.
Yeah, I mean, I'd see him again. I'd go see him.
Yeah, definitely. All right, thanks a lot, guys.
Appreciate it, Mike. 248-539-9797. We promise we get to some Tiger stuff. Got sidetracked. We'll do that at 131 on Carson Anderson on 97.1.
The Recap Show is an inside look for fans into the world of global soccer, women's sports, and all things gal culture.
From the inside perspective of two World Cup champions and Olympians.
Follow and listen to The Recap Show wherever you get your podcasts.
Okay, Tigers day off after very disappointing road trip. I mean, they've effectively undone what they've done in that hot streak. They lose two in Cleveland, lose two of three in Houston. Probably the one that really gets to me is the Tuesday game in Houston, because they lost it with shoddy defense and not great defense. This is not a team that has a lineup like the Dodgers where they can overcome mistakes. They have to be really good at a lot of the little things. And McGonagall made the physical error, and you know that allowed an inning to continue to be, you know, more dangerous than it should. So it's first and second, and there's one out or nobody out. I can't remember what it was. But then Howie Lee lets a ground ball get up the middle, which, you know, Bobby Scales said on the radio broadcast, he's got to knock it down because it was runner on second and third. Runner on third was going to score on an infield single, but because it rolled to the outfield, it allowed the runner on second to score, which gave Houston the lead 3-2, and they went on to win 4-2. There are games in series that are the more regrettable losses. That was one. Yesterday, they put no pressure on Houston. What's crazy is they probably, I would say A.J. Hinch probably put together a lineup and then proceeded to manage the game in a way that the critics probably wouldn't have a lot to say. He went McGonagall, Dingler, Green, Torkelson, Carpenter. Cole Keith hit six. But there was nobody near the top of the order that didn't belong. You know, there was no pinch hit. He didn't pinch hit once in the game.
No, because they went from right-hander to right-hander, and then the closer's a left-hander. But the left-handers that were coming up, McGonagall hits lefties and hit the home run.
Yep.
Riley Green hits lefties as well. So you left it up to they were going to stay in the game. But
as someone who's paid for our opinion on A.J. Hinch, I've tapped the brakes a little bit as they've navigated a large array of injuries. And yet, in my mind, now that they have everybody back, I think we're a little bit more open to what I consider more fair criticism. You know, it's not like you don't be critical of him, but kind of temper everything a little bit based upon who he has at his disposal. Now, you know, he's got guys back. I guess he did lose Glaber on Tuesday night. So yesterday was their first full game without Gleyber Torres. And the numbers with and without Gleyber Torres are
it's pretty, night and day.
Yeah. Now, Glaber's first injury coincided with no Kerry Carpenter, coincided with no Tarek Skubal. But, you know, AJ's paid to get the job done. And, you know, this road trip, with much of it with everybody accessible that he could play, it wasn't a good road trip.
No, they didn't, it's not like they got blown out in any game. It didn't feel like they were getting blown out anyway. But they just didn't do enough. And little things made a difference in a couple of those games. They could have won, and it could have looked a lot better, and it didn't. And they're going to regret that. Because when you're at a point in the season where you have got to stack wins, you can't afford to go, you know, 1-4 through that stretch. And then now you're facing the top team in the division this upcoming weekend. It feels like for this team to have any shot, they absolutely have to win the series and maybe even sweep the series to feel like you've got that chance to get back and get the momentum going in the right way. Chris McCoskey had this quote from Tarek Skubal. It's interesting. It says, "The reality is we need to play better baseball. The future for a lot of people in this room, not just myself, the outlook could look very much different in 2 months, and it'll all come to an abrupt end." So they know. Well, they know what the situation is. They have to turn things around. They got to do it quickly. And fortunately for the Tigers, it starts with Skubal on Friday night, and then it goes to Troy Melton on Saturday, and then we got this seemingly a Hail Mary approach with Justin Verlander on Sunday because apparently it's time, even though he's not fully ready by his own admission, but he's like, I guess we got to go.
And we'll get to that here in a second, but it was a bad road trip. It at least helps define them in the sense that, you know, you've got a team that they have a lot to sell. And, you know, if they fade, at least they get to sell. And I don't think they're in a rebuild situation. I think they're in a reload situation. Right? I mean, it's not a team that has to go back to square one.
No, I don't think they have to go back to square one. If they find themselves in a position where they're going to trade Tarek Skubal in a few weeks or in 5 weeks or whatever it is, okay, it may stop them from competing this year, but it doesn't stop them from the future. The reality is this team will have freed up over $100 million in salary this offseason because of Skubal likely being gone and Jack Flaherty off the books and some other contracts coming off the books. Justin Verlander will be off the books. You got over $100 million that will be freed up. And that's money that I think they're willing to spend. They got to spend it correctly, obviously. But whatever they recover from Tarek Skubal, these are players you're hoping are going to be contributing almost immediately for this team and whatever else they do. So I agree with you. I think it's more of a reloading situation that a team that's made the playoffs the last 2 years, if they don't make the playoffs this year, they should make it next year. That'll be my expectation.
I think they need to have a kind of trade deadline and off season where that's an expectation next year. And, you know, they've dug this huge hole. If I'm running the team, I'm not giving up yet. And I don't think they should give up yet. But I also am not going to be stubborn about it. Because the truth is, and I've said this over and over again, think how well they'd have to play to cut into the wild card lead. How well they'd have to play to get back closer to 500.
Well, they have to go 26-12.
Okay. So let's say they did something.
Before the all-star break to get to the 500. To the trade deadline.
So say they did that. Okay. If they do that and get to the trade deadline and you can't buy, because I don't think it's a team that's good enough to win the World Series. It might be good enough to make the playoffs. Then I'm back into the position, if you can't buy, sell, which I've said a bunch. Let's get to Verlander, because the uncertainty about what we're going to get out of him Sunday, the tweet from Evan Petzold, who wrote the story, Justin Verlander uncertain about health as he returns to Tigers for Sunday's game, but, quote, nobody sees the point of trying to delay this any further. What does that mean? Now, there's more in-depth quotes we'll get to them, but just a heads up, if you're a big Verlander fan and you couldn't wait to see him pitch in Comerica Park, you might want to go Sunday. Because that doesn't sound like I'm healthy, I'm ready to go. Can't wait for this opportunity. That sounds like, okay, nothing's getting better.
But it's not getting worse.
No, here are some more quotes on this from Verlander. We need to figure out what this looks like and I'm capable of, and if I'm capable to go out there and do what I need to do physically to compete. It's that time. In a perfect world, everything would be 100% and good to go, and I feel like I did 5 years ago. It's just not the case right now. Nobody sees the point in trying to delay this any further. You got to figure it out and figure out where you're at. Game intensity is the only way to really know. You know, I'm crossing my fingers here, but it sounds like they're kind of like, well, we'll see what happens.
It sounds like to me, now that we've had time to think about this for a while, yep, like he's plateaued in his recovery. And if it's not going to get worse, might as well get out there and show what you can do. And then hopefully it's that game thing, the game simulate, not simulation, but actually game experience that has you getting back closer and closer to where you were last year when you were healthy.
Yeah.
But if it's not going to get worse, okay. But that being said, I'm not sure that's a reason to take Cater Montero out of the rotation.
Well, that's why I said if I were running this team, I wouldn't give up. I'm not sure I'd put Verlander out there. I might just put Cater Montero back in the rotation.
Well, but you got to find out, right? That's the point of what JV is saying here, is that, and it sounds like AJ Hinch and Scott Harris, they're all on board the same thing. We have to find out. So Sunday's a find out day. And where is it going to be JV going five innings where he gives up one run on four hits? Or is it going to be JV can't get out of the third inning and this experiment's done?
Let's go to Brad in Waterford. You're on 97.1. Hello, Brad.
Hey, how you doing, guys? Great show as usual.
Hey.
You know, I agree with you guys. This does not start over. Everybody takes Cleveland for dead every year. If they lose a free agent or this or that, they always end up at first. Let's say Scooble's gone. Let's say the mega, you know, mega team Dodgers get him. You can get River Ryan, who steps in and starts. You can get Mike Sirota, who's a beast of a right-handed.
Okay, we're losing you, Brad. We got a bad sell.
But you threw two prospects out there for the Dodgers organization that are Sirota, I love. Just from a standpoint of looking at stats and watching game logs, I love this guy. He's got power. He's patient at the plate. Hits for high average, high on base percentage. Seems to be a guy that fits in exactly what the Tigers are looking for. And River Ryan is a pitcher that's got a lot of upside too.
Gator's developing a crush in the Dodgers organization.
So good.
And is zeroing in on doing, you know, nobody wants to hand the Dodgers the World Series. And if you hand them Scooble, they're going to be tough to beat.
Yeah.
But if you could take advantage of that and dip into their farm system, Sirota was your favorite, but I feel like you're warming up to almost all those Dodger outfielders.
There's a lot. I mean, they have prospects that are literally producing all throughout their minor leagues in their top 20 prospects.
And they're blocked. Specifically, the outfielders are blocked at the major league level.
Their entire double-A outfield has no chance of moving up to the majors at this point, at least with the Dodgers.
So it feels like it's a likely and, quite frankly, a great trade partner. 248-539-9797. It's Carson Anderson, 97.1. Sort of an eternal question every year when this comes around. Do you like or hate the U.S. Open conditions?
It's a great question.
Because they make the courses borderline unplayable. Rough is a foot deep. And
they just wanted to get longer and longer come Sunday. Mm-hmm. I mean, obviously it's punitive to not be on the fairway. As someone who loves to play golf, I hate that.
Do you?
You know, because I'm an amateur, though, right? I'm a terrible, you know, I'm a guy who goes out there and shoots in the 90s, right? I don't
Hold on. Do you shoot in the 90s?
Oh, I shot at 81 the other day.
Or do you shoot in the low 80s, Scott? In your last one rounds, you've been pretty consistently in the low 80s.
It was a par 68, but that's okay.
I wouldn't tell anybody that.
I feel like I need to because it's ridiculous. It was just too good that day.
Yeah.
But hitting out a rough like that it's frustrating for an amateur when you hit a ball, oh, it just goes off the fairway. Okay, where And then you got to search forever and find it. And then you find it and you're like, well, I can't get a club on that. How am I supposed to, like, I have no shot of getting into the green here. I have to literally just hack away just to get it back onto the fairway. That sucks. For me, it sucks. However, there are times when I love watching the pros struggle. And like, hey, that's punitive, particularly if there's a guy you're rooting against. Like, if you don't want John Rahm to shoot under par today.
Oh, I don't.
Want John Parr to hit every, you know, non-fairway he can. Oh, did you pull it, John? That's too bad. Are you in the rough? Oh,
is you're going to be there. You're going to be there for a minute.
Yeah. You know, watch these guys swing, and the club speeds are unbelievable, how hard they swing it, and they still get it out. It's unbelievable. But, yeah, I go both ways on it. It really depends on who has to hit out of the rough. Generally speaking, I don't like it. I think it's just one of these gimmicks that the U.S. Open does to try to make their courses tougher. So, I don't know. Each course is trying to make it tough in their own way, and each tournament does that. And whether they shave the greens down or make it impossible to hold the ball when it hits the green, those are unfair.
So what I like it because it's just a different challenge. Everything doesn't need to be the same.
Everybody has to play it.
And it feels like the battle is against par and that you're going to be around even. And that's okay with me. It, you know, there's some tournaments that you score big, and that's why I never got the pros think that the Detroit Golf Club's too easy for the Rocket Classic. And they said the same thing about the Buick Open up at Warwick Hills when it was here. And I'm like, courses are different. Challenges are different. And maybe I guess I'm not a golf snob, or I don't need to be offensive. I'm not so into it that, like, I find that to be a problem, too hard or too easy. But I like different challenges. I like seeing, and everything doesn't have to be cookie cutter, right?
Yeah. No, that's what's great about the tour is that each course is different.
Yep.
They have their own quirks or their own character, which makes it great. I mean, you don't see an island green on every tournament.
Nope.
But you get to that tournament out there in Florida, there it is. That's fun to watch.
TPC Sawgrass.
Sawgrass, yeah. So it's all fun. But in those playing conditions, I don't like those playing conditions for me personally. But to watch it, to watch the pros have to go through it, sure. Go ahead. Make it difficult.
Yep.
Let's see Rahm shoot an 80.
Well, at least a 73. I said over 70, 72 and
72
a half.
72 and a half.
Yeah, got to go over that. Tigers take on the White Sox. I'm going to just tell you, I expect the Tigers to win this series and look great doing it because the White Sox are good. And if you look at what the Tigers have done, they've played better against the good teams. Houston's one of the teams they're battling for a wild card with, just lost 2 of 3. Cleveland was hovering around 500. They lost 2 in a row. But Seattle is a first-place team. They're above 500. But Seattle's a first-place team. Tigers won that series. Tampa Bay is 11 games over. Tigers won that series. So now they're taking on the White Sox, who are in first place.
And the White Sox don't have pitching. They're all hitting. Right, they've got a handful of guys that really hit the ball. Pitching-wise, they have one starter, Davis Martin, who has a low ERA of 3.31. Outside of that, their starters have an ERA of 4.15 and 4.61, 4.50, and 5.82. Those are their other four starters. It seems like it's advantage Tigers if they're going to face pitching like that. Because they have been mashing the ball in June, as we had that stat the other day of how ridiculous this tear is that they're on right up until they got slowed down against Houston. But they still hit the 2 home runs yesterday in that game. But they've been hitting the ball out of the ballpark, and now they return home. We'll see how it goes. The Tigers I think they've got at least the first two pitchers in this series. There's a pitching advantage for the Tigers when you got Scooble and Melton out there. And then Sunday's matchup, we'll see what happens with Verlander. The closer for the White Sox, he's got 12 saves this year, but he's got an ERA of 3.8. All right, so Sir Anthony Dominguez, he is hittable. We'll see if the Tigers can take advantage of that if he has to come into a game. Maybe he doesn't because the Tigers already have a lead.
I'll tell you how this would be a really successful series. It has nothing to do with them winning or losing. It's Scooble goes like 7 innings and is healthy. Feels good. Then I'll feel good come Monday.
Yeah.
I'd like them to win. But every time Scooble goes to pitch, I just want to see him walk off that mound for the last time feeling good. Because that's how a disastrous season would sink even lower. They've got to be able to trade this commodity. And the better he looks, the better the offers could be, the more the bidders there could be, the bigger the bidding war, as this team is it moves towards definition as to what they should do, whether it's obvious or not. We bring in Rico Beard, who has just sat down across the desk. What's up, man?
What's going on, guys?
How you good?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
The old school Padres.
The old school Houston Oilers.
Yeah. Just go. Trying to keep up with you, man.
Is that what it is? You're is that what hero. You say every morning when you wake up?
You're my hero, man. Big poster of you. Yeah.
Yeah, I know.
Every day. It's like that Notre Dame you when you play to be a champion.
Is that what it is?
Try to be like Doug. Be respectful.
I appreciate that.
Do what you can.
I'm sure this is your goal in life every single
day. It is, man. I tell people all the time. Hey, you know that was my college roommate. Really?
There are some people that don't believe that.
I got photos.
Randomly assigned.
Yeah, I got photos. I've shown you a couple of them. Yeah,
yes.
We were there. We had Sports Radio Gator before there was Sports Radio.
That's a crazy thing. It was randomly, selected there.
There were some arguments. Let me just say this. Based upon the arguments from back in the day, I'm glad he's not my partner. With all respect, too.
Wow.
He won every single one in the eyes of the audience.
Gator?
And I'll tell you what it was. It was I would like present a case, and then Rico would say something that made everybody laugh.
Theatrics.
And then nobody cared what I said.
Yeah. It didn't matter about the facts. It was just who got the laugh.
Oh, he would get the laughs.
All right.
Gator, I can consult if you ever...
If you ever want to try to be crazy.
You want to take this show up a notch?
Say, there were a lot of people. When you would argue sports, a lot of people would stop and listen.
Yeah.
And I would lose every single time.
We're 19 and a half years into this. I think we're okay.
Yeah, we're fine.
Come on, man. Spice up the marriage.
No, we're good. What do you got planned coming up next?
You know what? I do want to start off with something. Watching the Knicks parade, you can't help but think about the Lions and a parade in Detroit.
Oh, dude.
And you know what? And I don't know. People may not. I just want to kind of put it out there. Like, what would this be like? They've waited 53 years.
Right.
The streets, New York is shut down. Think about New York, shut down right now. You could probably commit any crime you want, and you're going to get away with it because no one cares.
The Lions Parade would start in Saginaw and end up all the way down the end of Woodward.
See, I had to start to get the old Silverdome. And starting in Pontiac and just go down Woodward all the way through Hampshire, through everything.
It would be absolute insanity.
Who's there? Is Joey Harrington show up? Because they're digging up Knicks.
They would have 250 floats, 250 cars and floats and stuff. So, I love this topic. You guys lean into that.
I am. And maybe it's just me. I don't know.
It would be.
I hope the people respond.
It would be incredible. You guys got to come up. Let's plan the parade for
who's
someday.
In there, man?
Get the route going.
Have a great show. Stay safe, everybody, and treat each other with respect. We'll be back tomorrow. Carson Anderson, 97.1.
It is not hard to destroy a college. Last season, the podcast Campus Files brought you stories of fraternity drug rings, stolen body parts, campus cults, and more.
And now, Campus Files is back for another season.
There's a guy screaming into his phone. He's like, I just saw Charlie Kirk get assassinated right in front of me.
Every week is a new episode and a new story.
It was so chaotic. It's almost like a university under siege.
Listen to and follow Campus Files. Available now wherever you get your podcasts.